Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. The Crow Nation has lived around the base of the sacred Bighorn Mountains from time immemorial. Traditionally organized into three bands, the Mountain Crow, River Crow, and the Kick in the Bellies, the Crow Nation entered into the first Fort Laramie Treaty in 1851, allocating 33 million acres in the Montana, Wyoming, and Dakota territories. The second Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868 reduced the Crow Indian Reservation to 8 million acres in south-central Montana territory. The current Crow Indian Reservation is 2 million acres. It is home to three mountain ranges, two river basins, as well as substantial natural resources, including grazing lands, dry land and irrigated farmland, and coal, oil, and gas. The Crow Nation currently has an enrollment of over 13,000 members and is organized as a general council with three distinct branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial. Newt Old Crow is Speaker of the House. Speaker Old Crow, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Thanks for the invitation.
Tell us a little about your background. Where did you grow up? What did your parents do?
I grew up on the Crow Reservation, born and raised there. Father was a rancher, then he's a carpenter. He was a tradesman carpenter. My mother was a homemaker.
Brothers and sisters?
Got two brothers and three sisters.
Are they still on the reservation or not?
A couple are off the reservation.
I see. Your dad was a rancher, meaning he ran cattle, he owned cattle. How does that work on the reservation?
He owned a few head of cattle when I was young. And then later, at a young age, they divorced, and then he sold out. Then he went to work as a carpenter, since that was his trade. So.
And you went to school on the reservation?
I did for a while, and then my junior and senior year, I transferred to Colstrip because my dad lived on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. He remarried, and we lived over there. So I went to Colstrip. So that's where I graduated, was at Colstrip.
Now, growing up, but if I ask you, as you graduate from high school, who is this young man? How would you describe him, yourself, at graduating from high school? What interested you? What were your hopes?
Like any young person, I wanted to continue education. My hopes and dreams were becoming an architect and maybe running a firm someday. But things got difficult, and my dreams kind of faded, but being in construction trade my dad was in, I kind of followed suit with that, and then went on to welding school and became a welder also.
You wanted to be an architect. How would you describe your central personal values? What values you had taken from growing up on the reservation? Who is this kid or young man? What does he believe in, most importantly?
A lot of the work ethic my parents taught me was, you know, work hard, you know, try to earn your own living, be self-sufficient, not depending on anyone. You see someone that needs help, stand up and help them rather than just looking at them struggling. That was some of the things that my parents taught me.
All right, so you're going to be a welder. What happens?
Well, I finished school with that. And then at the same time, that's when a coastal power plant was completed and the market was flooded with welders. So being a new welder, I didn't really have that opportunity. I picked up little jobs here and there, welding and building homes and whatever.
What years are we talking about when you start welding, get out of high school?
Early 80s. I got out of high school in the 70s, and in the early 80s I moved on to welding.
So you're having trouble getting jobs that on the main opportunity.
Yeah. So what I did was from there, because construction jobs, as you know, are by the project or seasonal, I decided to get a higher education, and I went to school to become an instructor. So I thought maybe that might help me.
Right. Where'd you go to school?
MSUB. At first Little Bighorn College, and then graduate from there. Then I went to MSUB.
And how was that experience for you?
It was hard because at that time I already had a family, and trying to struggle you know, being able to support the family and to support continuing on with an education was very difficult.
How many children?
I got 3 boys and 3 girls. So one of the points that I would like to stress also is, like, I'm not the only one that had struggled with those situations, because many of the young men and women on the reservation get married at a young age and have families, and then they're trying to continue at their education. They too have those struggles that I faced.
How did that play out for you ultimately? Were you able to finish school or not?
No, well, I got an associate's degree at Little Bighorn College. I went to MSUB. I didn't finish there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back to construction for a while. And then from there, got into politics. I thought maybe I can help my people that way in some way.
Okay, getting into politics, meaning what specifically and when?
I first decided to run for the legislative office back in 2005, because prior to 2001, we had a general council type of council where every voting age member was a member of that voting council. But now in 2001, when we changed the constitution, we have 3 separate branches of government where the legislature has 3 representatives from each district.
Hmm.
There are 6 districts on the reservation, which comprises up to 18 members, 3 from each district.
And so you decided to run for one of those?
Yeah.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Newt Oldcrow, Speaker of the House of the Crow Nation. We can relate to the 3 branches of government. In your opinion, has that improved government on the Crow Nation? Is it a functioning system?
I believe so. Due to the fact that there's more continuity now, when the legislation is brought forth to the members of the body, we would send it to committee, just like the federal government, where you have things in committee and you elaborate on those and research that issue and decide whether or not it's good for the tribe. Where in the old council, many of the voting members didn't know what they were voting for, and they would just go on party lines, whether they were for that chairman or against that chairman, and they would vote for or against that issue based on whose side they were on politically at that time.
How old were you when you were elected?
50.
From what you said, given your values, you ran for public office to help your people. Fair?
Yes.
Okay. Over the decades that you'd lived there, you'd lived basically 50 years, but some time away, what are the major issues that you wanted to help on? What are the major issues facing the tribe?
Lack of jobs, which contributed to the poverty situation on the reservation. Lack of jobs and lack of housing, which is probably because of lack of jobs. It's just overall situation where, you know, there's no economy, where there's no structure, and we have to, as a legislature, I believe my job is to help the Crow tribe with my fellow senators over there at the branch. Our job is to develop a base for the Crow tribe for economic stimulation, so we can develop not just jobs, but help young men and women develop their own businesses, have that American dream of being their own boss someday, of owning their own company, whatever it might be, farming or ranching. There are a few farmers and ranchers on the reservation, but very, very few.
Now, let's take a sort of break it down. I'm surprised to hear you say very few farmers and ranchers. You have 2 million acres of land. Is it leased to other people, leased to non-Indians? Why aren't there Indian farmers and ranchers?
The majority of them are non-native ranchers. There are very few tribal ranchers. I believe it's a lot of the financial part where, let's say for an example, I own a piece of land. It's not very big, but I can't go and get a loan because it's held in trust. Okay? Now a banker or finance agency will not lend me any money. Okay.
Because you don't own it personally.
I do own it personally, but it's held in trust by the federal government. So, oh. I guess that what you're saying is true. I don't own it personally because it's held in trust by the United States government.
Okay, so you can't use the land as security because ultimately it goes to the government.
It doesn't go to the government, but let's say a banker cannot foreclose on me and
that's what I mean.
Take my land.
You can't take your land, therefore the land is not to typical security to raise capital with. Okay,
but
so
the catch 22 that I always see here is, let's say a new person from New York City comes over here, decides to be a rancher, acquires some tribal leases, not owning anything, is given those loans to start those businesses. And I feel like it's a disservice to the local community. Because they can loan to the non-Indian and they can foreclose and take their equipment. And why can't they do that with the natives? They always use that land part because I tried to be a rancher. I tried to become a business owner in that way. But a banker or a ag agency or whatever would say I didn't have any capital. I didn't have nothing to start with, which
right.
I didn't. So I never was able to start anything or given that opportunity.
We have the impression that there are various, in exchange for the treaty, tribes got certain kinds of support. And therefore, we would assume that you could get a loan to start a business. You're saying, no, that's not true. You can't get a loan from conventional sources. Do I understand you correctly?
You can, at a minimum, let's say a small business loan, but it would not be large enough to start anything. They kind of push us more toward, let's say, becoming a vendor in regards to like opening a little five and dime or something like that. But a lot of the young men and women, I don't know, to me it seems like they're discouraged from using our resources, like which would be our land, to develop our own cattle and wheat farms or barley farms or whatever. And we've come to a point where a lot of the young men and women have been discouraged so much they don't look at things that way, where that's an avenue to, you know, prosper. To be,
all right.
You know.
So where do people who have jobs, are they working on the reservation or off the reservation for the most part?
Many of them are become public servants. They work for the Indian Health Service. They work for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They work for the tribe. The tribe now ends up being an employment agency. That's where the majority of the people are looking at for jobs, and it's a big burden on the tribe. Like 2/3 of our resources comes from our coal sales.
Say that again. 2/3 of your tribal income?
Approximately 2/3 of our tribal budget is from our coal resources.
All right, let's talk about coal while we're on the subject. Do you have coal mines on the reservation? How does that work?
We have one coal mine on the reservation, Psaloka. Coal mine that's run by Westmoreland Resources. We get the tax income from that, and then we get the royalties from that.
I see. Do they employ tribal members in the mining or in any respect?
Yes, majority of the employees there are tribal members.
Approximately how many people are involved, tribal members, employees in the mine?
There was over 120 last year. But due to the cutbacks in the coal sales, right now there's been some layoffs, and I believe at this time there are approximately 70 young men and women out there right now.
About how many people on the reservation?
Approximately 7,000.
And if you figured roughly half of those are adults, 3,500, 70 employees, that doesn't sound like a huge amount of jobs, but you're saying, I think you said, that the revenues, the tax from the extraction provides two-thirds of your government's budget. So you're really dependent on coal.
Yes, we are.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Newt Oldcrow, Speaker of the Tribal Legislative Branch of Government. Now, coal is increasingly controversial with international treaties to reduce emissions of methane and carbon. Coal has become a target for strict regulation. Is that affecting your tribal economy?
Yes, it is. In fact, one of the generating plants that the Crow Tribal Coal provides to the Sherco Power Plant in Minnesota, one of the generating plants, I guess, is shut down, and that would reduce the coal sales there.
Native American culture is widely regarded as very concerned for the natural world, the health of the environment, taking care of the earth. Coal has emerged as a controversial product, which is often very polluting, okay? I mean, in terms of stuff that is in the coal smoke that is beyond CO2. Now you have layered on that climate change. Mm-hmm. Has it ever been an issue in your tribal government or among the people about your reliance on this particular product? Controversy of any sort?
Directly, we have not been affected, I guess, but one of the things that we took that into consideration. That was why we thought of an alternative, which would be the coal to liquids project, where the coal would be converted to diesel fuel, jet fuel, gasoline, what have you, and the emissions on those are far better than mm-hmm. the conventional diesel fuel, jet fuel, and gasoline that the natural oil is producing at this time. And one of the things that we're looking at in regards to the coal to liquids project is capturing the CO2 and using that CO2 to build plants to grow algae. And with that, from that algae, the algae could be used as a fertilizer. And all these have been tested and worked on. One of the companies or schools that helped us do some of the research was the MSU, Montana State University. They've done some of the research on the algae. The algae not only can be used for fertilizer, but biofuels. So that would be a great way to capture the CO2.
My recollection, and it's not fully clear, is that some tribes in Washington had some problem with your developing a new mine or something. Am I in the ballpark?
The issue wasn't us developing the new mine, but I guess the new mine, the coal from the new mine, was going to be earmarked or targeted for Asia, and being shipped to Asia, they would need a new coal port because the existing coal ports are to capacity at this time.
Yeah, I know there's a controversy in Washington and Oregon about that. Let's get back to the liquefied coal. I don't know anything about it. There was recently an article in the Billings Gazette about a new technology that holds promise to substantially reduce carbon emissions and capture other pollutants. Is that kind of what you're talking about trying to develop on the reservation?
Yes.
Now, that's big money. I mean, I don't know anything about it, but that's got to be big money, new technology, et cetera. If the Crow Nation has difficulty getting financing for a ranch, for example, how do you go about getting that kind of resource? Who do you look for financial support?
I wouldn't really know that answer. I guess we would be working with bigger companies that would be interested. We do have a couple interested companies, but right now we're just courting one another, I guess, so to speak.
Okay, what about the federal government? The federal government supposedly is interested in reducing poverty on reservations, not just yours. They are not a source of potential support, or because of the coal policy, they're not interested. What's your sense?
It seems like they're not interested because we've been lobbying with Congress to start maybe a pilot project on the reservation regarding coal to liquids. We've been lobbying with them. We had support from the Northwest tribes that don't want the coal port. So we got support from them to start a pilot project. They thought that was an alternative, and that would be one way to help us. And from there, we went to the National Congress of American Indians, got their support to start a coal project. So the voice of Indian country is telling Congress, maybe you guys should help the Crow Nation build this pilot project, but we haven't heard anything from the federal government at this point in time.
Is it your sense that if this liquefied clean coal technology was pilot project was tried on the reservation, it would have significant economic impacts on your poverty level?
It would have a great impact. It would develop jobs. In turn, jobs would give opportunities for these young families to have their own homes. The reason I stress homes is because, let's say, for instance, homelessness is not visible on the reservation. Our tribal chairman has said that in several speeches. It's not visible because we have 3, 4, 5 families living in one household because we take in one another. And that's why homelessness is not very visible on the reservation.
But it's real, you're saying?
It's real. It's very real.
4 to 5 families in a house, where do they get the money for food?
Well, they have to run to the welfare system of the nation, the food stamps. The few people that are working in those families would provide some of the food and for the utilities and whatever. But the majority of it probably comes from food stamps because of lack of employment.
My recollection, I can't call the numbers out of my mind, but food stamps is not a luxury ticket. It transfers into a few hundred dollars per child. I'm just wondering, do they get any other supplemental income? Do they get income for being a member of the tribe? Do they get any other benefits, the average family, that can help them make ends meet in the absence of a job?
One of the benefits that we do provide is for the senior citizens age 67 and older. Those members get $300 a month that we provide for them. And some of the elders are maybe the homeowners of that home. Mm-hmm. And that small, whatever income that they receive, goes to helping that family.
Now, if I understand right, the federal government provides funds for various programs that you have, education, health, et cetera, which provide, I think you said, the bulk of the jobs on the reservation. Is that fair?
Yes. Some of the jobs that are on the reservation, let's say like the tribe contracted the transportation from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, they provide jobs for construction and maintenance of some of the roads on the reservation.
See, my question would be somewhat different. In other words, poverty is a common reality among tribes. That's well known and documented. One would think there would be a federal agency or part of the BIA's responsibility to help you develop a self-sufficient economy. It seems logical, but I'm hearing you say that does not exist. That sort of direct advice, cooperation, investment capital.
I feel like what the Bureau does is just maintaining a standard, a certain standard that they feel like they're obligated to, and they're maintaining that standard is to just make sure crime doesn't go rampant. There's no things going on the reservation that's not supposed to, I guess, so to speak.
The people aren't starving.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like maintaining a certain standard, and that's a very minimal standard.
Well, if I'm the head of BIA, what do you tell me you want? What do you want from us?
We don't want the Bureau to be an obstacle in what we do in trying to develop our resources, whether it be the tribe as a whole or an individual member. I know there are some instances where they might have cases where they have success stories of certain people that they've helped, but the majority is still suffering. One of the things that some of the other leaders in the past have said, it was, we don't want a handout, we want a hand up. That's not a quote from me. It's from one of the other leaders. We want to help ourselves. We want to be able to help ourselves. And the Bureau, we don't want them to be an obstacle, but we want them to be in assistance.
Okay, at some point, somebody has to get down to nuts and bolts. In other words, if I'm hearing you right, because of the structure of the tribal territories and the trusteeship or some overlaying of those things, you cannot, as the tribe, have the same relation to bank capital loans as the average American. There are layers in the way of that. So just sitting here knowing very little, it seems to me there are two choices. One is the rules have to be changed to allow you to get access to private capital as a normal business venture, or an economic development bank would be set up under the authority of the BIA with a specific purpose of encouraging business ventures. Is that what you're talking about, one or the other?
Well, actually, the tribe would want to start their own bank. We've produced legislation on our part to give the executive branch authority to start a bank. I think we don't need the Bureau involved in that. It would be the tribe itself that we would govern ourselves. That way we could have that bank as a resource for the young entrepreneurs that want businesses to be started. We do have some programs on the reservation from the BIA that we've contracted with, and we've got a few businesses trying to get started, but they're just taking baby steps right now. But we would like to see a full-blown place where young men and women have that opportunity, and the bank system, I think, is one of the ways. So at this time, I think the tribe's on the right track to start economic development with some of our ventures. We have a C-store that we opened at Fort Smith. We started purchased a gas station right there in Crow Agency. We have some of the land buyback monies that we're using toward land purchase of some of the lands that we lost in the past. So those are some of the assets, that's good things that are happening right now. And I think we're getting to the right track to where we're going to start heading toward prosperity rather than despair.
Speaker Old Crow, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us on Home Ground. To our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.